That's not all that's. What the hell is that, Dave? I hit the wrong button, apparently. Hold on.
Disaster.
Yeah, what's that? I don't know what's going on. All right, hold on. Okay.
You've ruined everything.
We're going to cut this in post.
Okay. Absolutely. Cut. I'm putting a cut marker here. Cut.
That's all right.
Hey, Dave, listening to this when you're editing it. Cut. Cut.
That was I Can't cut. Make You Love Me by Bonnie Raitt, which is not cut.
What?
Yeah.
What?
I typed it in and then I didn't quite cut. Watch what I was doing. All right. All right. And welcome to I'm Trying to Think, episode 48. I'm Chuck Warner. With me, as always, is Dave Stern. Dave.
Yeah.
How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks.
You are hearing Kim Kardashian's new single, Jam, Turn It Up.
Or Turn It Down.
From her much-anticipated album, I don't know, whatever she's calling it, Turn It Up. Jam, in parentheses.
Oh, so it's Turn It Up, then maybe Jam, like the Jam is, you know, possible?
Yeah. Jam is the is out. And then Jam, open parentheses, Turn It Up.
Oh, it's vice versa. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Like, that gives you the idea that somebody thought that it was a song that conveys complex enough ideas that it needed a title and a parenthetical.
A parenthetical to tell you, Turn It Up. I don't really get the parenthetical in songs, honestly. Is that like a subtitle?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I don't know. It's like titling something with, you know, the actual title and colon, a subtitle. I don't know.
I don't know any songs with colons. Do you know a lot of colon songs?
I can't think of any songs with it. Songs usually use parentheses. Colons is like a movie.
It's a movie thing. Nobody uses
what the hell?
A hyphen.
What the hell?
What?
I hadn't even slightly considered the fact that different artistic media use different stupid punctuation.
But they do.
To indicate unnecessary subtitles.
But they do.
But they do. Movies use a colon.
Yeah.
Songs use parentheses.
Yeah. What do you think? Albums, you could go either way. Album titles. I could see a colon or a parentheses.
Yeah, that really depends. I know. Book reports, always a colon.
Yeah, you gotta use a colon. But I'm just saying, like, is the parentheses basically like, I couldn't decide which title to call this?
I think that's one of the things. There's a couple ways that goes. There's parentheses of, I couldn't decide what to call this, so I'm going to give it both titles. There's the one sort of parentheses that I would say is actually the artistically valid song title parentheses, which is, you know, this song has some sort of irony or joke, and you're using that parentheses to, you know, undercut perhaps the actual title of the song or give additional contextual information that enhances the song.
All right.
See, I went analytic on that. You didn't expect me to go heavily analytic, I did. So I'm going to say that's, you know, the valid kind of parenthesis. And, you know, after using that kind of, you know, highfalutin language, I would say that I can't think of a specific example right now off the top of my head, but I feel like country music uses that a lot, where it's like they give the title of the song, and then the parenthesis is the punchline to the joke.
You feel like, Dave, the funny thing about you saying that to me is that you say, I feel like country music does that, but you don't listen to any country music, or really, I mean, can't name a lot of country music.
I can name a lot of it, I just don't listen to it.
All right. Well, can you think of any, I was looking up titles with parentheses, because I can't really, this is one that I actually did think was parenthetical, but I, couldn't remember for sure, but I verified it with the internet as much as one can verify it with the internet. Don't you, open parentheses, forget about me, close parentheses.
That is legit?
Yeah, Simple Minds, yeah.
Classic country song.
Also, I would love to hear a country version of that song.
Also, isn't that horrible Toby Keith song, like, isn't Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue also have a parenthetical
what
in there somewhere?
What would I know about?
It's not a joke.
I do listen to country music, but it is not Toby Keith. That is not country music.
I know. Doesn't he have Toby Keith's Beer For, parentheses, My Horses?
Beer For. That would be a great title. No, but, dude, open parentheses, looks like a lady, close parentheses.
Another classic country song. Actually, talking about Aerosmith, brief digression into Aerosmith. I heard Dream on the radio on the way here.
I'm sure you did.
I did. You can't stop it.
I don't disbelieve you.
And there's one thing that's always baffled me about Dream On, and I'm curious if this is just me not having listened to enough early Aerosmith to understand this, or if this is something that you get to.
Maybe.
Okay, so basically, Dream On, the guy who's singing the verses to Dream On, I assume it's still Steven Tyler, right?
You mean, yeah, like the guys, you don't mean the narrator of the song you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, the literal physical person. Yeah, I'm not like analyzing the text. I'm just talking about the song. Yes, the
vocalist is still Steven Tyler.
But like, the voice is clear, it sounds good, and it's not like this, you know, it doesn't sound like the horrible, scratchy frog that everything else Steven Tyler has ever done sounds like. Am I the only person who thinks that that's like... The vocalist of most of Dream On, there's parts like at the end of the chorus where he's really, you know, belting the Dream On, where you can hear, you know, awful, off-key, froggy Steven Tyler.
And he starts screaming at the end.
Yeah, that part. That's where you can really hear
as the organ, beer, you know, reaches its crescendo.
But most of the song, it's like, it's clear. Like, I would listen to the band that guy sings.
Oh, that's just like, I think it's like an evolutionary step. That's like the fish coming out of the sea. Because,
the end of Dream On is when Steven Tyler turns into awful Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
You can pinpoint that precise place.
Almost. But 1973 is Dream On. And it's their first single. Okay? Their next single is Same Old Song and Dance, which is still a pretty good song. Then you get to Train Kept a Rollin', which I know you hate.
You hate as well, if I remember correctly.
I'm not a fan. I'm not saying I hate it, but I'm not a fan.
I will say, I like the song Train Kept a Rollin' from the 50s, like the actual song. That's cool.
Yeah.
That cover is god-awful.
And the Yardbirds did a pretty good version of it, too. But it's the Yardbirds. Then you get to, like, SOS, Too Bad, then Sweet Emotion, Walk This Way, where Walk This Way, he's starting to just scream for no reason. And you're like, what's going on? That's 2 years later.
Even Sweet Emotion, it's one of the more decent Aerosmith songs, but it's clearly Steven Tyler, you know, in the recognizable Steven Tyler mode.
And then this is where things get a little confusing, but it looks like maybe the next Aerosmith single is Back in the Saddle, which is a huge screaming song for Steven Tyler. I'm back! I hit the red there, didn't I?
Probably.
Yeah.
I just didn't even want to look for that because, you know, I don't want to know.
So at some point he loses it. Like, yeah, Dream On is like the first part you're like, oh, and then he screams at the end and you're like, eh.
But yeah, the most of it is a pleasant voice and then that just seemed to go away.
Yeah, but
and
I
it's
think...
not the drugs, like, because the drugs destroyed their career. And I'm sure they didn't, and I'm sure, for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they didn't help his voice. But voice thing changed long before the drugs ruined the band.
Well, like I said, by 1977, he's doing Back
in the
Saddle.
I also like how I'm saying the drugs ruined the band as if, like, man, there was this really good Aerosmith going, and then the drugs, just such a waste of squandered potential. No, not so much. No.
All right. All Night Long, open parentheses, All Night. Well,
that's just stupid.
Lionel Richie. He wants to reinforce that to you. All Night Long. All Night.
Oh, God.
It's better than his first title, All Night Long, Till About 2 a.m.
Well, it's more promising, certainly.
And what was the other one? I Can't Go For That, open parentheses, No Can Do, close parentheses.
Well, that's fine.
You can't question Hall & Oates, though.
No, I mean, that was important because, you know, there are two ideas that are central to the song. And by ideas central to the song, I mean phrases that happen a lot. And they both need to be in the title. So there you go. That's perfectly reasonable.
All right. How about I Ran, open parentheses, So Far Away, close parentheses.
Also fair. Same category.
They're clarifying. They're adding detail. You're okay with that. All right, that's fine. Open parentheses, You Gotta, close parentheses, Fight For Your Right, open parentheses, to party, close parentheses.
Okay, that's just kind of a disaster. That's just a syntactic disaster.
Money, open parentheses, that's what I want, close parentheses.
Yeah, that's close. That's fair, I guess. I'll reluctantly allow it.
And this is a favorite song of mine from when I was younger, but most people are probably not familiar with it. Spinal meningitis, open parentheses, got me down, close parentheses, by Ween. It's a great song. Here, we'll finish off with this one. Pride, open parentheses, in the name of love, close parentheses, you too.
That mostly seems like a sentence with arbitrary parentheses.
Well, does he say, where does he say pride in the song, does he? Or is it just pretentious, like, naming this, like, Blue Monday, you know, New Order, just naming songs that, with names that have nothing, well, that have to do with the song, but are not in the lyrics.
Well, it's Bono, so I think we're on pretty safe ground saying that the pretentious answer is the correct answer.
Pride, open parentheses.
That's what I want?
No, I was going to go with, what is it? Fight the dark, kill the dark.
Turn off the lights.
The nights, I don't know, something like that.
Spider-Man, take back the night.
Wait, I don't know.
Did I make that joke last time?
I think I did. Spider-Man, open parentheses, that's what I want. Close parentheses.
All right. Well,
so I'm trying to think as a podcast brought to you by the Foundation Institute. Find them online.
New record.
At foundation-institute.org.
11 and a half minutes in.
You
that's
can
a new record for us.
Visit us at imtryingtothink.com, but you probably know that already. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/imtryingtothink. And there's Facebook, facebook.com, and then you search for I think we can get facebook.com/imtryingtothink. I don't know how. I got to look into that.
Yeah, we call a guy who knows a guy.
We got to find a guy who knows a guy. We know a guy, though.
We do, yeah.
Yeah, so, whatever. Yeah.
But still, we know a guy. But if you just call him directly, they don't let you. We have to call another guy who knows him.
You can also email us at contact@imtryingtothink.com. And I'm thinking of a new, I'd like to see some emails from people of, I want you to add parentheses to a song title that already exists. That's what I want to see.
Get Sounds creative. Good. Listener challenge. Make it happen,
Listener
guys.
Challenge, yeah. So take a song that you like or don't like that has a title, preferably a short title, because you don't want to get a long title, then add a long title. But add a parenthetical after or before that song title to give us more detail about the song. You know, something like that.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Okay, so now that I think we've proven my main point, which is that song titles with parentheticals are mostly country songs.
Yeah, that's proven. Nobody's going to challenge you on that.
We just amply demonstrated that that's correct.
Right.
Long list. Country songs. You too.
All right. Hey, good looking. Open parentheses. What you got cooking? Close parentheses. Folsom Prison, open parentheses. Lose, close parentheses.
There's a tear, open parentheses.
In
my
beer,
close parentheses.
All right, anyways, so now that we've proven that,
I think we can move on to kind of some of the main topics of the show, main thrust of the show.
Thrust.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you for really doubling that emphasis.
You're welcome.
That's good.
I'm the voice. I'm the voice talent over here. You know, throwing it. Thrust.
You're punching it all in. You're
thrust.
Making it happen.
Thrust. Yeah.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Main thrust of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I've got I got so caught up.
Yeah.
In the thrust that I may have lost the thrust.
You thought I was going to say thrust again, so you...
I did.
You were waiting.
So I cleared my brain just to let it wash over me.
Yeah, and that's good. But then I was cooking up a little surprise for you over in the cooking it up kitchen over here.
Oh, man, is that a new segment? Is that a new something?
The cooking it up kitchen.
All right, then.
What am I cooking up in the cooking it up kitchen?
Yeah, I'm going to act as... Hold on. I'm going to act as if that's a thing we planned, that we planned in advance because we're good at this. And I'll give you the lead-in. And now, we're tossing it over to Chuck in the Cooking Something Up kitchen. What you got cooking?
I'm cooking up a surprise. That's it.
That sucked.
I really wanted...
I'm mad at you now.
I have to admit, man. I wasn't committed to the segment. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, man. You know. We'll clean it up in post.
Yeah, Cooking It Up kitchen. Is it Cooking It Up kitchen, Cooking Something Up kitchen? I don't know. Either way, it's going back to the Drawing It Up board. Because we got to work on that.
Yeah, you got to, Drawing It Up, open parentheses, board, close parentheses. All right. So now that we got that, we can get to the main thrust of the show, Dave, which is...
Well, one thing I think we want to start with is you've been, in some of the past couple episodes, you've been talking about, moms learning philosophy. You've had to go there.
Yes.
You've had to help explain philosophy to parents.
Uh-huh.
Now, last episode, we had to cover Aristotle. And, we hit some of the high points. I think we hit,
He was a guy.
He was a guy. He was a Greek.
He listened to Plato.
We eventually sort
of... Then he made up his own stuff.
Yeah, we nailed down that he's not Aristotle Onassis, Greek shipping magnate. Greek shipping magnate. Those are two different guys. We got that he, thought that objects' qualities reside in the objects themselves, not the forms.
Right.
We got, biology. We got the Nicomachean ethics. Yeah. We missed that he founded logic, that he started basically symbolic logic.
Yeah.
He did a bunch of other crap. But basically, we were a little flat-footed on Aristotle.
Here's what it boils down to, okay? Let me introduce you to... Or let me tell you two words you already know. Socratic, Platonic. Let me introduce you to a word that you will never hear. Aristotelian.
Actually, funny you should mention that.
I mean, I've heard the word we've actually taken philosophy
Aristotelian.
Courses.
I hear that, which I think is how it's pronounced.
I don't know. Aristotelian? That sounds better.
Yeah, that sounds better, so let's use it.
But nobody says it. Whereas a layperson will hear Platonic a lot in their life. Even though it doesn't really mean...
Really, some of that is because it means a different thing.
Yeah, it has another meaning that isn't actually that Platonic. But then Socratic, some people will hear. More people will hear. And then Aristotelian, nobody's hearing that.
Yeah. I think some of the problem
Aristotelian, open parentheses, nobody's hearing that, close parentheses.
No can do.
No can do.
A lot of the things he invented, it was like, wow, it's really impressive that someone came up with this. But again, benefit of, having a couple thousand years back. Like, his physics, it's like, man, really good job coming up with, trying to systematize physics and, think about it better than anyone had before you. Almost everything was wrong.
Yeah. We give people a lot of credit for being wrong.
Yeah, because
they were wrong.
He was wrong better than everyone.
He was wrong better than everybody else. Yeah.
Before him.
He was wrong in a superior way.
But anyhow, here's the main thing I want to get to. Is we were a little, caught by surprise. We were a little flat on Aristotle. So, you were when your mother asked you for help on it.
Right.
And then I was when you asked me to chip in.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think we need to do is try and remember back to, philosophy 101 survey courses. We need to anticipate what you're going to need to know about so you can give some good mom explanations.
All right.
Okay, so let's just breeze through Western philosophy in a couple minutes. Okay,
right,
so there's the pre-Socratics, I assume they didn't talk about.
We're over, yeah. They were a drop in the bucket. You get Pythagoras, and then you just Heraclitus, and you're like, okay.
They were a drop in the bucket, but the question was, were they a drop of fire? Were they a drop of water? Were they a drop of earth? And which of those things constitutes the universe? Bam, pre-Socratics.
Also, if you got that water, drop of water by walking into the river, was it the same river that you walked into yesterday?
Yeah. Heraclitus is more interesting than just the standard, which substance do I randomly pick and then say the world is all made of?
Heraclitus is awesome.
Yeah.
He's a man.
But that's not what we need to talk about very long, because they're past that. Then you got Socrates, Plato, Aristotle.
Aristotle, yep.
Now, here's the question. Now we got to predict, because there's a couple things that could happen.
Well, then you get some Roman Dark Ages, pretty much.
Yeah, you could go into the, you know, there's some stuff Hellenistic, there's some Romans, there's some stuff in the Dark Ages. Of those things, what, if any of them, do they go to? Because I will say, one thing that I think is possible for a pure survey course, they may just skip about 2K ahead and go straight to Descartes.
You could go straight to Descartes.
You're missing some stuff there.
I think you hit Aquinas first, maybe, depending.
Well, there's a couple ways I could see, you know.
You can jump straight to the Age of Enlightenment.
You might hit the Romans, you know, your Seneca, those guys.
Yeah, Seneca, and there's another guy, but I'm forgetting who he is.
You might hit Augustine, maybe.
Yeah, but not too many people. I think you go.
Usually you only hit Augustine if it's a Christian-specific teaching, because as a philosopher, you mostly just need to know, he's the Christian Platonist, and you can kind of be done. Really, if you want to be that pithy, you can then, usually you're not, because with Aquinas, you can also, you can also talk about his, you know, silly proofs for God. But if you want to be that pithy, you can just be like, Augustine, Christian Platonist, Aquinas, Christian Aristotelian. Moving on.
Yeah. That is actually how I've heard it summarized in the
past. Then the Dark Ages.
Then you get to Descartes.
The Dark Ages are mostly just sad. What is it? There's a Boethius and he's got his wheel. Then there's, actually the Dark Ages were not so much sad as they were a rich time for the flowering of philosophy and mathematics. But that was happening
In the Middle East.
So we like to pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah.
The same way that the Turks,
the Arabs, the Persians, they were doing awesome stuff.
Yeah.
We were
beating each other European. With, like, stupid helmets.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually, you know, I am Syrian partly by descent, so I get a little bit of credit. I get a little bit of no Dark Ages, but most of me is white guy, so, yeah, I get a lot of Dark Ages.
So, yeah, in the Western corpus, we don't pay attention to that. In the same way that, you know, there's also, you know, a rich flowering of, you know, Eastern, you know, Buddhist philosophy going, you know, from, you know, like Socrates way back, you know, all concurrently through this.
Yep.
Then we mostly ignore it until, like, Schopenhauer half understands it and then Nietzsche completely misunderstands it and so on and so forth.
Well, the wonderful thing, I think, too, is that, you know, I blame anti-Semitism, but there are certain people who never there was a lot of Jewish thought contemporary with Jesus that never gets talked about. And I mean, like, you, I think it's worth talking about Jesus in a philosophy course as far as Sermon on the Mount, that kind of stuff, like materialism, you know, and aestheticism. When you talk about moral philosophy, how do you avoid talking about, you know, do unto others? But the thing about do unto others is that it was, you know, said a couple decades before Jesus by Hillel. And, you know, nobody cares because he's a Jewish rabbi.
Well, there's one guy who cares about Hillel, and that's Dr. Bronner, who makes the hippie soap.
Oh, good for him.
I think it's Hillel he cares about. I haven't read the label of the hippie soap in a while.
Well, Hillel's the nice one. And anyways, and how do you not talk about moral philosophy with talking about those guys and then talking about the same exact, you know, concept arising in Buddhist thought and Confucianism, you know. But nobody ever talks about that stuff. It's kind of goofy. It's like moral philosophy started, I don't know, with Kant or something.
So yeah, speaking of whom, that seems like if they skip, you know, the Dark and Middle Ages, you know, they're certainly going to skip non-Western philosophy because that's just how philosophy survey courses act.
All right. Yeah, then I think you go Descartes.
We might have Descartes next. You may have to brush up.
Oh, you got to have Descartes. You can't do a survey course without Descartes.
Yeah.
And then you got to have...
Well, then do they hop over to Locke? Or do they skip to Kant?
You probably get a little Locke, and then you get Kant, and then...
Oh, yeah, because they have to... No, they have to do at least a little bit of Locke, because they have to set up the rationalism, empiricism dichotomy before they can present the semi-correct but neat-sounding solution of... And then Kant resolved it.
And then, I mean, if you're lucky, you might get some... don't know, Kierkegaard or...
Dash of Hume.
Oh, yeah, you gotta get some Hume. If there's political... if it's political philosophy at all, then well before that, you'll get some Hobbes.
Yeah, you get Hobbes, Locke, Rousseau is kind of that branch of a tree.
Yeah. And then... I mean, you maybe get existentialists.
Also, if you're doing moral ethical philosophy, you know, you've gotten John Stuart Mill in there probably sometime after.
Yeah,
Hume.
Yeah, you got to get the utilitarians in there, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I think almost regardless, you're going to get utilitarians, so.
Yeah, but then if you're moving down into modern philosophy, right, we've kind of quickly talked our way through the, you know, 17th, 18th, 19th century. Then, you know, there's, again, the kind of, you know, almost rationalist empiricist split where you get, you know, the continental versus the, you know, analytic. And in a survey course, in my experience at least, usually you get the continental because that's easier to survey, whereas analytic has a lot of numbers. So basically you get continental philosophers and one of Bertrand Russell's easier to understand essays.
Which is a shame because Russell is a genius. And, I mean... Yeah, I don't know. I'm a big fan of Bertrand Russell, but I don't think anybody gets the good stuff out of him. But
well, because a lot of it is, I mean, he's got his
a lot
good,
of it is anti-religious stuff.
Well, yeah, there's basically it's two things. It's either sort of mathematic and sort of abstruse and hard to understand,
mm-hmm.
or it is anti-religious.
Yep. Yeah, but it's good. It's still good thought, you know.
Yeah, anyways. It's all very good thought.
Anyways, and then. You end with, like, I don't know, that French guy. No. Derrida? Yeah, maybe you end with Derrida, and they're like...
I mean, like, everything's been blown up, and go home.
And you're like, I don't understand anything now. And they're like, yep, good, go home.
Oh, deconstruction. You know, one thing I wonder about Derrida sometimes, would the fact that his philosophical outlook... And, you know, the word that it's been boiled down to, you know, deconstruction. Would the fact that that has been sort of appropriated now to mean, like, guy who smoked too much pot at 2 a.m., like, basically overanalyzing, like, the Smurfs?
You know,
would that amuse him or piss him off?
I don't know, but I think the problem is, is he still alive?
I believe he's dead.
Is he? Because they made a movie about him that's not too old that I watched.
Yeah, the one with him talking.
Yeah, yeah, but he might have died since then.
I believe he died.
He may have died in, like, the recent past. Last 10
I want to say
so.
90s.
Possibly. I don't know. But anyways, blah, blah, blah. Point is, the thing I think about Derrida is that I think, much like Nietzsche, I think that, you know, there's something to get from Nietzsche is, like, with nihilism, he thought, that's not the answer, that's just the first step, and then you have to understand how to overcome it. And that's the problem with Derrida. There's deconstructionism, and he doesn't offer any, you know, way to get past it. Like, he doesn't offer a reconstructionism or a constructionist view.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of a reason that even the people who, you know, were slightly after him and contemporary and, you know, listened to a lot of his ideas and maybe some of the only people ever who actually understood some of them.
Uh-huh.
There's a reason those people are, you know, don't also consider themselves, you know, deconstructionists, but they call themselves structuralists.
Yeah. And like, I just think that's a huge, hole. And it's just sitting there. If you're sitting in a room with Derrida and he's like, blah, 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 I'm French. And you're like, wow, that's this deconstructionist stuff. That's really neat, Derrida. So I can't go wake up tomorrow and live as a deconstructionist. So can you tell me exactly what we learned from this? And he's like, no.
All right. So
je ne sais pas.
I think what we've figured out is basically, in order to be ready for some questions your mom has, we need to reread all of Western philosophy.
Yeah,
or at least all of modern Western philosophy.
There's a lot of stuff that I'm just way behind. I need to reread Kant so badly.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's actually one thing I've been thinking about trying to do a little more this year. is make this be 2011. It's already like a quarter of the way done, so it's too late, but I don't care.
You could do Q2 through Q4.
Sure. Fiscal 2011.
Fiscal year 2011. Starts on July 1st.
So, you know, even a little bit before that, so there'll be some prep, there'll be some run-up time, but then fiscal year 2011...
Yeah, you got to do some run-up time for the project, yeah.
...is the year of primary sources.
I would call in...
What do you think? Primary sources?
Yeah, but I'm saying call in some experts and do a study. Conduct a study to see if that is going to be fruitful.
For the fiscal year?
Yeah. Prepare. Before July 1st comes along, you want to have a study in hand that tells you the predicted results for that fiscal year project. Because I'm going to tell you, Dave, you don't want to go in empty-handed. You got to need a strategic plan. Like a three-year strategic plan for your fiscal year. So actually, maybe you should do it in, like, 2014. And have a strategic plan that goes 3 years that leads up to... Yeah.
All right, then. So I'm going to slightly modify this, I think. Okay, so fiscal year 2012...
Yeah.
Or no, wait. Fiscal year 2011 is the year of feasibility studies for profitability of reading primary sources.
Exactly.
But that said,
I may be listening to too many thought leaders, though.
Probably.
Yeah.
That said, I think it's a good idea because one thing I've become more cognizant of in the past couple weeks that I'm a little bit nervous about is basically since I graduated college, really. I feel like my knowledge is getting wider and wider and wider,
yes.
But no deeper. You know, yes. If anything, shallower.
You are too little bread, butter spread over too much bread.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Sounded like I said it wrong.
You stumbled. No, you stumbled, but you said the right things.
Awesome.
Like for me, I'll put it this way. I think the phrase paper tiger.
Yes.
To me, is a little outmoded for what it's trying to communicate. Because whoever saw a paper tiger. I mean, I get what it means, but one, whoever saw a paper tiger.
They were in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game.
Were they?
For the NES. Yes, there was a Japanese level. It might have been Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. Don't quote me on this 100%, but there was a Japanese level where they had paper walls. And tigers were painted on the paper walls, and then the tigers...
Oh, and they'd hop out?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was either in a bonus level for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game for NES, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 for NES.
Okay, so I'll revise my statement slightly.
Note that I distinguish Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game for NES, from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the NES, which was a different game, side-scrolling,
and awful
platformer.
That ridiculous
pretty
one,
awful,
yeah.
Pretty awful.
We all know that the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for NES was awful. But moving back...
I'm glad that we've established that.
Yeah. I don't think Paper Tiger is a great metaphor because that one bonus level of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, possibly Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game for NES, accepted.
Yes.
I feel like most people, one, don't ever encounter Paper Tigers as a thing, so it's a kind of an odd metaphor. And two, you certainly don't encounter tigers that often, so it's not that fruitful a metaphor.
The people of India might.
True. Okay, so Indian listeners, none of this applies to you. You can keep on calling stuff paper tigers.
Right.
But what I think, to me, the modern equivalent of the paper tiger is the Wikipedia sage.
Hmm. Or that guy on Facebook who's always posting stuff. Posting links to news articles.
Well, that guy's just an asshole.
Commenting.
I'm not sure how metaphorically fruitful he is, but he's definitely an asshole. As is the Wikipedia sage. But to me, the Wikipedia sage is a resonant metaphor.
The Facebook pundit?
Facebook pundit is definitely... believe me, that's definitely a concept which resonates with me and makes me want to not pay attention to people on Facebook. I'm not sure if it's a specific metaphor for this, the way that... Because to me, Wikipedia sage, again, it's, you know... You feel like you know everything, but... You've seen the words of everything.
Oh, I see.
You know
so what
I mean?
You mean is a person who reads Wikipedia for knowledge.
Yeah.
Not a person who might edit Wikipedia articles.
No. Basically.
Because those people source, Dave.
Yeah. Because, I mean, things in Wikipedia have sources, but again, it's reading, like, this is why I want to, you know, at this point, the project has been pushed back after a study, so it's probably going to be like, yeah, FY 012, 013, something like that. But why I want to get back to reading primary sources is because I feel like things like Wikipedia or like an excitable person who's summarizing things, what those are pointers to knowledge.
Yes.
But I feel like people who are assholes, and also increasingly myself, kind of look at the pointers and then treat it as if they have knowledge.
Okay. Well, I'm no good at coding pointers in C++.
Oh, it's a disaster. Yeah.
I'm terrible at it. I get segmentation faults left and right. So I don't even do it. I mean, I don't use any kind of... I don't use a pointer language at all, but I don't have to, so that's pretty nice.
That is good, yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I mean, there's something to be said for that. Like, yeah, when I read through the articles on philosophy stuff on Wikipedia, I often find them lacking, because it's like, well, there's an important point here that they didn't make, or that's not clear, or it's not written well. And I'm just like, no, I'm way too lazy to add to it, so...
Which is the kind of thing where, like,
but it's a good thing.
This point was subtle enough that it took a book to make.
But what's good about it is that there's, as a pointer, I can access the knowledge because I actually have the knowledge. So when I'm just, like, forgetting something or, like, you know, something's just kind of eluding my grasp, I can usually look at a Wikipedia article about it and have the knowledge refreshed in my brain, even though it's not on the page.
Yeah, that is the thing. It's basically when you have the actual knowledge, a pointer to the kind of the pointer to it is great. But when you don't have the knowledge and you kind of make yourself trick yourself into thinking that having the pointer is having the knowledge.
Yeah.
That's where your mind gets weak and flabby and shit gets dangerous.
Yes, and I mean yes. That is, yeah. That's why I like primary sources.
Yeah, so are you with me? Fiscal year 2011 is the study for the feasibility of profitability of reading primary sources. Fiscal year 2012, we're going to read the shit out of some primary sources if the numbers crunch out.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Let's get that. Let's get some experts in here, though. Oh, wait. We are experts.
I was going to ask you about that. I was going to say we should just do that.
We could consult each other.
Yeah, because we're experts in this stuff.
And we can conduct our own study, which is good.
Yeah.
Do you think there's some paper tiger danger there, though?
Gonna have to check Wikipedia and get back to you.
Well, I'm gonna have to look up the paper tiger article, figure out what even the hell it is. But I bet I can assume. I bet I know. But I get the idea, you know. So I feel comfortable using it.
All right.
All right, Dave, you ready for a break?
Oh, yeah.
All right, then. We'll certainly be back with more I'm Trying to Think in just a moment. And now I leave you with the parenthetical wisdom of Hall and Oates with, I can't go for that, open parentheses, no can do, close parentheses.
I was getting worried about that close parentheses. I was pointing. You weren't looking.
And welcome back to episode 48 of I'm Trying to Think. Dave.
Yeah.
You gotta talk about it.
We have no choice, I suppose.
It's all over the news. It's something big. It shifted the world. The geographic, axis or magnetic pole or some bullshit. Like 12 feet, and it moved Japan over 80 miles. I'm talking about the Charlie Sheen debacle.
Yes, yes. It's lives have been lost. It's been tragic. I should probably get around to donating to the American Red Cross for it.
No, Dave, that's the earthquake. Charlie Sheen.
Oh, right. A guy said things that were funny, and then... Okay, my bad. I was confused.
Yeah, all right, cool. So, we got to cover this. It's just a thing. You know, we're topical.
We're people. We're in the world.
Yeah.
Therefore, we have no choice.
There are topics, and we have to cover them.
Our hands are tied.
Our hands are tied. We have to talk about Charlie Sheen. So, I'm thinking, this is my angle, Dave.
Uh-huh.
What sentence of all the famous sentences that Charlie Sheen has uttered, I would like for you to pick one that to you is the craziest. I have a reason for this. Now, So just bear with me for a moment. But do you think it's the tiger blood and Adonis DNA? Do you think that I'm on a drug called Charlie Sheen and it would make your face melt and your children would scream?
I don't know. At this point, I think, honestly, you're saying things that are almost like it. But honestly, the thing about things Charlie Sheen said is, after a certain point, you can just say anything and it sounds sort of like something Charlie Sheen said.
Yes, but I'm talking about the actual
quotes. Yeah, the actual stuff.
And I'm going to get to your point in a moment.
Okay. Well, I'll admit, I'm purely, you know, while I'm an expert in a lot of things, I'm kind of an amateur Sheenologist at best.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, basically, I peruse, you know, enough of the internet that I was, you know, in on the, you know, Charlie Sheen issue pretty early.
Right.
Which means, you know, because we live in such an accelerated age, and, you know, because I've elevated that acceleration to higher heights than enough people that it kept going, basically, I was done with Charlie Sheen pretty quickly.
You were done with Charlie Sheen before it even came out?
Yes. Totally. I liked his early EPs, but he sold out pretty quick.
Well, let's see.
But, I don't know, the maximally crazy Charlie Sheen thing.
I'm just saying. Can we get some...
And I'd probably go with the one... There was something about a warlock, right?
There was
something about Vatican warlocks.
He just out of nowhere, he said, "I'm a warlock." I think.
Okay, yeah. I think the warlock one does it for me, just because that's very random.
That is very random because I mean, the word warlock is just
the other stuff is sort of self-aggrandizing, not in a way that makes sense, but in a way that I can comprehend. But the warlock thing is just not out of nowhere, that would be the craziest thing for me.
I'm trying to find the exact quote. Just, I don't want to be misinformative.
No.
You want to be...
In a world full of twisted Charlie Sheen misinformation, we know you trust us to get things right.
So yeah, exactly.
So we're
going
to try to not fuck it up.
And we don't want to fuck it up. But yeah, I'm not finding it easily, but it's something about being a Vatican assassin warlock. I don't know how those three words go together. But those three words were definitely chosen.
They're all in there. Now it's all there.
Now what I'm asking here, Dave, is this is my next question. I say a lot of crazy shit. What would I have to say that would make you think that I was crazy? Like, if tomorrow I said to you, well, not tomorrow, let's say Wednesday, because that's when we'll actually be, you know, hanging out. If Wednesday I say to you, you know what? I'm really tired of these frog tits that I got. Would that sound crazy to you, or is that something Chuck says on, you know, the average week?
I don't know. To me, that would sound plausible. I would assume that that's just terminology I haven't heard.
Right.
And it'd be like, if you said to me, you know, I'm tired of these frog tits, I'd just be like, well, I don't know, you just got to eat better. Got to eat right.
Exactly. Or something like that, right?
So that's not crazy enough.
That's not crazy enough? Like, I mean, that's what I mean. Is there a level where the sentence grammatically makes sense and you would think I was crazy? Or do I have to start just completely disconnecting thoughts? Do I have to start, like, down the synesthesia road, where I'm like, man, this table tastes green.
Actually, that would make perfect sense because the table's green.
It is green, but I'm just saying.
I get that it's a different sense, but... Yeah. That I would just assume you were being kind of flowery and poetic.
All right.
Like, so green I can taste it.
So if I just...
So yeah, that wouldn't do it.
If I'm like... what was that?
That's just Chuck clearing his throat.
So I don't think... Like, I don't know... I'm not a rock star with tiger blood and Adonis DNA. I'm not winning, you know? I'm just a guy. I'm thriving. That's what I like to say. Thriving! But that's not as catchy. But I've lived my whole life this way. Nobody's trying to get me into rehab. Nobody's firing me from a job where I make $2 million an episode. That's for sure. And I wish somebody would hire me to that job. Hey, listen, studio television places. If you want a crazy guy to pretend to be a crazy guy, I'm your man.
Here's the thing, though.
I am tired of these frog tits.
If they wanted a crazy guy, though.
Yeah.
Then they'd be keeping him on.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. Here's the thing.
They didn't want a crazy guy. So right now, you're blowing it.
I don't understand
why they... You gotta keep it under... Clam it about the frog tits.
See, I don't understand why they...
Frog it about the clam tits.
I don't understand why they fired him either, because to me... Okay, look. You're a bottom-line corporation. Charlie Sheen has not said anything anti-Semitic yet, unlike fashion designers and Mel Gibson. He hasn't used the N-word, unlike former, you know, sitcom stars. Okay, he's dating two porn stars or something.
I'm glad
like that
you couldn't say Michael Richards because it hurts your heart a little because you enjoy Kramer.
I'm just trying to be, like, vague, but obviously I was talking about Michael Richards, Mel Gibson. Oh, I did say Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
You said Mel Gibson. That's vague.
An anonymous road warrior.
Anyways, he hasn't done anything completely horrible, dangerous, or illegal yet. I mean, except for doing tons of cocaine. Why wouldn't you keep him on? Like, he, right now, is a huge money-making machine. People love him. You need to cash in. Somebody's already making a Tiger Blood energy drink. Like, somebody is coining in on this shit, and it's not you.
Here's the thing, though.
Whatever, is it NBC, ABC, CBS, whatever.
I guess... The couple things are, one, again, we talked about this last week when we talked about, you know, the shit my dad says, or whatever, is CBS, you know, they're like number one, because old people love them.
Yeah, old people do. Do they do NCIS? Because old people love NCIS.
I think they do.
I watched NCIS, like, and it is terrible. Let me say this first. It is an awful show. That does not make a lot of sense, and it's completely unrealistic. But it's catchy. Like, it pulls you in. And you're like, these are ridiculous characters, and these situations are stupid. I want to see what happens next. There's another episode on. I can't wait.
That's the evil genius.
Yeah. And it's not like Law & Order. Like, Law & Order has sensible stories for the most part. Some of them are outrageous or silly, but most of them are...
Please, Chuck.
Yeah.
Ripped from the headlines.
Ripped from the headlines, right. And most of them are good stories. And there are good actors on Law & Order. And there are not good actors on NCIS. I mean, wasn't the star guy, wasn't he in Summer School?
Who's been on NCIS? I think, isn't Chris O'Donnell on one of the NCISs?
I don't know.
You've got Nipplesuit Robin.
Nipplesuit Robin.
You've got LL Cool J.
LL Cool J? Which, it's like, no, Ice-T is a really good actor. LL Cool J... says knock you out. I mean, his mama says knock you out, but, you know, he's still on the knock it. Mark Harmon, yeah. Mark Harmon of Summer School fame. Have you seen the movie Summer School?
Nope.
If you saw the movie Summer School, you would say, I'm not hiring this guy to play a government agent. Ever. And then if you saw NCIS, you would say, I'm not hiring this guy to play a government agent. Ever. So, yeah.
But anyhow, Mark Harmon. CBS, more financially successful than you'd think. And here's the other thing you have to remember about Charlie Sheen, besides just like the, haha, this is a quotable sentence. Most of the actual crazy stuff he said, you know, it hasn't been, you know, insulting to racial or ethnic groups. Although you can argue about the thing where he was calling Chuck Lorre Chaim. You can argue about that.
You can.
But
it is his name.
Yes.
I think he was maybe making more of a comment about the guy changing his name because he's Jewish than a guy being Jewish.
Probably. Basically, that's one that you could argue both ways, but the main point is, you know, overall he hasn't been overtly, aggressively, you know, racist or, you know, anti-Semitic or whatever. But the people he has been viciously insulting, the people he has been viciously assaulting are women, but that's a different thing.
Yeah, basically. But, I mean...
He shot a woman who it was either his wife or fiance at the
time. Did he shoot her?
He shot her.
I thought maybe he shot a gun near her, but I don't think.
Now, I'm pretty sure. Like,
if you shot somebody, surely there would at least be a jail time.
You can look it up if you want to fact check that.
I don't really want to fact check it, but why not?
I believe he shot.
If he shot somebody, then, I mean,
he's not a good dude.
He should have been fired when he shot the person, though. I think it was later way back when he's talking about tiger blood. Oh, right. Well, in the 90s. I mean, come on.
Well, we were all shooting people in the 90s. We were on flannel and listening to the grunge music. And also, what's their names? D-Light. D-Light's Groove in the Heart was very popular.
Oh, that is a good song.
And we were shooting people.
And I think there was a Touch Myself, too. That was out then. In the 90s.
Divinals. Yeah, good the tune. But anyhow, the people he's been insulting.
He accidentally shot Kelly Preston. Accidentally. In the arm. But of course, she broke off the engagement. I don't think most marriages can't survive accidentally getting shot in the arm.
You know, I think, and this is going to be me basing this on nothing, but I think a marriage could survive a negligent discharge of a firearm. Like, I think a marriage can survive an accidental shooting. I'm not sure a marriage can survive an accidental shooting where accidental is in quotes because it was the, you know, bankable star of Hot Shots Part Deux doing the shooting.
Well, I mean, it's not like Kelly Preston's a nobody. She could have brought some charges.
I feel like it was it's one of those things that was hashed out in a back room somewhere.
You think in the back room somewhere? I'm just saying they have millions of dollars. They can hash out a lot of things.
Exactly. But anyhow,
Charlie Sheen automatically shoots me in the arm. 10 episodes of 2.5 Men later, nobody shot anybody.
But out of curiosity, did you just say automatically when you meant to say accidentally?
I don't know.
You did say that Charlie Sheen automatically. You did say Charlie Sheen automatically shoots you in the arm.
If Charlie Sheen shoots me in the arm with an automatic weapon accidentally, there. I mean, like I said, a couple episodes of 2.5 Men later. Nobody shot anybody.
But anyhow, the point that I was trying to make, but has been derailed a couple times, is that the people he was insulting specifically are the people who fired him. Duh.
Yes, I mean that's the kicker.
Yeah, they're people too, you know?
I'm just saying, if I had a really good worker who was making me that much money, he could call me a few names. He could call me Chaim, it's fine.
But remember, you know, they got other things, you know, I mean,
Chuck Lorre, my name is Chuck.
He's got the Nerd Face show. He's got the Fat People show. He's doing all right. He can cut this loose.
He can cut this guy loose.
He can cut it loose.
Make money with the Nerd Faces.
Yeah, the Nerd Face show and the Fat People show.
Well, they're bringing Full House in, right?
I know. I've heard rumors of Stamos.
Stamos.
I've heard rumors of Rob Lowe, but he's already on Parks and Rec, so they can't get him.
I think they should, instead of getting Stamos, they should go for Coulier. He hasn't done anything since. He's just living off that Full House money. But, I mean, come on. Get some Dave Coulier in there.
Is he living off that Full House money? Or is he... Because we think he's disappeared. But here's my question. Has he disappeared...
into Canada?
Yeah, or is he doing stuff, but it's in Canada?
Yeah, it's possible he's doing... Because he is Canadian, so... Mm-hmm. You know what it'll tell me?
Yes.
The wonder of the internet.
Be a Wikipedia sage or an IMDb sage in this case.
We need to know what Dave Coulier is up to. That's just a fact. All right, let's see. He has been on a TV series called Bob and Doug.
McKenzie?
Yes. He's the voice of Bob McKenzie, which doesn't make any sense. But
Does that mean it's a cartoon show?
It looks like it's possibly a cartoon show, yeah.
You know...
No, it's...
I'm going to say...
That's 2009.
If talking about Charlie Sheen...
Say, Canadian animated sitcom?
Obviously, yeah. But I'm going to say, I was down on talking about Charlie Sheen, because I got tired of it. Especially once he started winking a little bit, when you're just like, yeah, he knows he's being ridiculous, and now it's less fun. But
I always assumed... I mean, I was always on the, of course he knows what he's doing, wagon.
I was there pretty quickly, but I figured for the first, like, you know, day or two, you know, he might just be on drugs and whacked out of his mind. Yeah, and that would be fun. But anyhow, if talking about Charlie Sheen is what I had to do to know that they made an animated Bob and Doug show, Bob and Doug McKenzie show.
Yeah.
in which Dave Coulier voiced one of the characters, then, you know, God bless talking about Charlie Sheen, because that just made my day brighter and better.
Well, it was on in 2009, but I don't see that it's on anymore, so who knows.
So Coulier is probably free.
He's probably free to do Two and a Half Men, which is the original here. So let's see what Dave Coulier did after Full House. The 13th Year.
Okay.
Probably Canadian. The Even Stevens Movie.
That's Nickelodeon.
Is it?
A thing. I think that's Nickelodeon or the Disney Channel. It's the Nickelodeon Disney ABC family.
America's Most Talented Kid. The Surreal Life. So there you go. That is 2003, The Surreal Life. His career is in the toilet officially. Skating with Celebrities, 2006. That sounds like Dancing with the Stars, so...
Yeah, I remember that
Canadian,
existing.
Canadian, because they don't have floors. They only have ice.
That's American. Or at least they made an American version, because I remember its existence, and I wouldn't if it was Canadian.
Well, regardless, that's another careers in the toilet moment. Robot Chicken, where I think he voiced himself.
Obviously, which is not... That's not a healthy career moment.
Shredder Man Rules, 2007. TV movie.
Man, I assume it was a attitude-filled parody of John Irving's The Cider House Rules.
He was the host of the Great School Games, so that sounds pretty good. Direct-to-DVD movies he did, too. The Family Holiday and Farce of the Penguins, which I think Farce of the Penguins was...
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, he probably... That's the Bob Saget's March
Bob
of
Saget
the Penguins
did it,
parody.
Yeah, and so Bob's like, here, you can come
but
in.
But then it turned out that March of the Penguins was not as timeless... As I believe Bob Saget hoped.
Man. Who knows what he hoped when he made a Penguins farce movie. I mean, come on.
Man, remember when America cared about March of the Penguins intensely for like 2 months?
People felt so bad for those penguins. Now they don't care.
Man, what the fuck was that about?
Now they're like, fuck a penguin. They know the polar bear movie, because the polar bears are in the real trouble. Penguins, they got it made. Made in the Shade. I don't know if that's
the true. Shade of what?
The shade of... Yeah, there's no shade in the Arctic, so they're screwed. All right, well, that's our Charlie Sheen bit. That was mandatory, but we've taken care of it. Is there anything else you need to say about Charlie Sheen?
No, I think we've got it. I think if there's one thing we can all learn from this Charlie Sheen debacle, it's that there was a Bob and Doug McKenzie animated show in Canada. Dave Coulier voiced one of them. Who was the other one? I need to know now.
Oh, you need to know now? You're going to have to give me a second.
Wait, okay, let's think. While you're looking it up, what other just aggressively Canadian person could it be?
Alanis Morissette.
Oh, that would be awkward.
And they dated, so yeah, this would be really awkward. Yeah. I don't know. I can't think of any other Canadian people. I don't believe in Canadians. Actually, Martin Short is Canadian.
Well, yeah, I mean, all of SCTV and the Kids in the Hall.
Yes. Well, okay, so Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis were the executive producers.
Yeah, the actual people.
Yes, but it's actually Dave Thomas.
Okay, so
and
he's
Dave Coulier doing the voices. So it's Dave and Dave, and you, Dave. So there's three Daves now doing Bob and Doug. We have no Bobs or Dougs present. So it's a more Dave-oriented show.
Wait, am I working on that show?
I don't know. You must. There's two Daves already. Why not?
Because if I am, then I'm not getting fucking paid. So I gotta get on a phone call to Rick Moranis, who's apparently... Like, is he a recluse or a farmer or something now? I feel like he's something, and that's why he's not doing it, but Dave Thomas is.
Maybe he's just smart enough to, like, live off his money and not make an ass of himself?
That's possible.
It says he retired in 1997.
He's got those Honey, I Shrunk the Kids checks. He's made. He's got it made in the Shade.
He did come out in 2008 to help on that Ghostbusters video game that nobody played.
Ah, yeah.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had the voices and everything. Nobody played that game. You would think with the Ghostbusters, they would have the money to make that game play. Nobody played that game. Oh, well. No Ghostbusters 3, Dave. Never going to happen.
They keep talking about it.
Never going to happen.
Yeah, and the Ramis... No, what is it? Is it Ramis or Wright? No, am I getting them mixed up? Reitman? Ramis? Which one's a director? Which one's Egon?
That's a good question. Ramis is
Ramis
Egon.
Ramis is Egon. Reitman's the director. Dan Aykroyd is a crazy person.
Yes.
And they all are talking about Ghostbusters 3. And then Bill Murray's just kind of like, nah, I'm too busy, like, basically doing better things with my life.
Being in Zombieland, his cameo in Zombieland is genius.
Mm-hmm. Really, I still think the most genius thing about Bill Murray, and I've heard this pretty consistently as an internet thing, and it might just be a BS internet thing, but I feel like it's something he does.
All right.
Is, one, I know it's a fact that he randomly just, like, shows up at, like, low-rent hipster parties.
Well, why not?
Which is great. But apparently what he will do is he will literally go up to someone on the street. Like, he will sneak up behind a random person. Like, basically, like, put his hands over their eyes. You know, and just, like, when
this is going in a good direction.
No, and when they turn around and is Bill Murray, he just kind of smiles and says, "No one will believe you." And leaves.
But if he does it too much, then everybody's going to believe him.
Apparently he does it just enough.
Just enough. But yeah, I mean, if you told me that, I wouldn't believe it, because what would Bill Murray be doing in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but given just the random parties he goes to, I would imagine it is.
I bet he just posted that he had somebody post that on Facebook, and then they got out like that.
And this is like, what a way to live.
Yeah, if I were Bill
Murray. That's a guy
Murray.
Who's got it figured out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, being like, you know, whoever's kind of studio, indie movie, not even indie movies, because you still get paid, so you just do like kind of quirky studio indies to get paid.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, you know, do your Jim Jarmusch movies, do your Wes Andersons, and then just kind of flump around New York enjoying yourself.
His work in Wes Anderson movies is all...
It's impeccable.
It's remarkable. I was watching The Life Aquatic again last week, open parentheses, with Steve Zissou, close parentheses. And
Bringing it back.
And yeah, I was just like, that's Bill Murray. When I watched him in Ghostbusters, I thought this is a guy who really can't do very many characters. And I was wrong. He does.
Well, there's, he's kind of doing, like, mature Bill Murray. Basically, there's, like, funny, like, I don't know, Bill Murray kind of has two characters. And he does shades of them. There's kind of weary, resigned Bill Murray. And there's, you know, 80s kind of acerbic Bill Murray. And then there are kind of...
Probably cocaine-involved Bill Murray.
And then there are in-between characters. Like, you know, like Groundhog Day is kind of a bit of both of those.
Yeah. Scrooged is as an interesting... I mean, he's an interesting role there. But that movie doesn't have enough... He doesn't have enough support around him. And the script's kind of clunky. But...
But I would say there's basically two Bill Murrays, and he's really good at being both of them, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I don't have a problem.
They're great.
Go Bill Murray. Bill Murray, if you ever want to be on I'm Trying to Think and, you know, put your hands over my eyes and I turn around and it's Bill Murray and nobody believes me because you won't talk, you're welcome to come visit.
Fantastic.
I mean, we are the indiest of the indie. We are the hipsterest of the hipsters. This is so hip that nobody listens to it.
That's pretty fucking hip.
That is so hip. Dave. So hip. All right. So, Dave, have you accomplished what you want to accomplish today?
Yeah. I think we're good.
You ready to close out episode 48?
Yeah.
Pull the big switch down?
Yeah. Now, I've gotten this sort of tedious distraction of recording episode 48 done. Now I can get back to my true joy in the day.
The next episode.
Is editing episode 47.
Yeah, you got to enjoy that, you know. Right? The next episode, Dave, will be our
That's why it gets
seventh,
done so promptly.
Our seventh square episode.
Very exciting.
Yeah, because we have episode 1, episode 4, episode 9, episode 16, episode 25, episode 36, now episode 49. That's a big milestone.
Mathematically thrilling, Chuck.
Yeah.
It's mathematically
thrilling.
Then
after that, it'll be episode 50. Who cares? Episode 51, that's not a prime number, not exciting. Episode 52, no, yeah. I think episode 53 is the next exciting one because it's prime. So that'll be good.
I like that you've glossed over 50, which would be like a milestone.
That was the joke.
Normal people.
That was...
Damn it.
The joke.
I wasn't sure if it was...
All right.
We're done.
Yeah.
We're done here.
So thank you very much for tuning in to I'm Trying to Think episode 49. I hope you've enjoyed the Charlie Sheen talk mostly. I mean, can't get our minds off that Charlie Sheen. We'll be back in some number of weeks, probably around 2-ish, with episode 49. For now, I'm going to leave you with more parenthetical wisdom. This time is from Tom Petty, who says, "A woman in love open parentheses, it's not me, close parentheses.
Well, Tom Petty is a man. Of course it's not him.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's a weird song, Tom Petty. Kind of crazy. What is he doing? It's like, oh, I don't even. All right, just move it on. That's it. Enjoy Tom Petty. I mean, it makes no sense. She's a woman in love, and it's not me. That's like saying, you know, he's a rhinoceros, and it's not me. I mean, oh. Or she's that girl over there in the corner, and it's not me. Yeah, I mean, we understand the concept of being and, you know, that a person can't be two people. That's something we kind of accept in the concept of personhood.
Sein und Tom Petty.
Yeah.
Cut.
That was I Can't Make You Love Me by Bonnie Raitt, which is not cut.
What?